Napa know-how.
A Napa guy knows more isn't always better, unless we're talking about full-size vans. These beasts do more than get you from A to B. They have so much space a man can live in it. With shag carpeting, waterbed, and a sweet lava lamp, these mobile abodes have all the comforts of home. With quality parts and plenty of Napa know-how, you can keep the original tiny house running longer, stronger. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
Hey listeners, my name's James.
And I'm Tim.
We're your hosts.
You're listening to The Wave of Wire.
Welcome to another episode of The Wave of Wire. My name is James, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Tim. Tim, how are you today?
Fantastic, James. I'm always fantastic when I'm here at The Wave of Wire doing things we love. And we're joined by someone who loves to do everything that we love to do and more, because he's, you know, takes on all these editorial and writing jobs because he has nothing better to do than watch the game of basketball. I mean, who wouldn't want to do that? Duncan Smith, hello to you.
I'm doing great, guys. How about yourselves?
We're fantastic, Duncan. We're pretty excited to finally sit down and chat with you after all this time. So it's pretty exciting that we're going to be able to dissect the calamitous season that the Detroit Pistons have been having so far. And one question first off. I've been pretty excited to see what you've been doing over there at 16 Windsor Ring. So do you want to just tell everyone a little bit about the project you've been working on?
Yeah, sure. It's been a lot of fun, actually, right off the bat. It came about pretty organically, just a fairly small group, maybe 10 or 15 guys that we just talked in a Twitter DM group, basically. And somebody mentioned just offhand, kind of flippantly, we have enough guys in here that have, you know, some following, like we should just make our own site. And it was seen as a joke for maybe 30 seconds, and then people started to run with the idea, and it kind of developed from there. So we're pretty excited with how things have been going so far. We're getting excellent reception from pretty much across the industry. We've gotten attention from league executives, players, former players, Keith Smith, and Adam Joseph helped break a story about league expansion.
Definitely saw that. That was all over my Twitter. Steve Nash follows you, that you're legit.
Yeah, that's
the Twitter rule.
You're definitely doing things right when Steve Nash is following you.
That is the Twitter rule.
All right, Duncan, let's get stuck into the good stuff. So yes, as the editor of Piston Powered, in case anyone listening didn't know that, have you been able to put your finger on what has been the issue with the Pistons this season? Do you know if there's any discord in the locker room, or are the issues deeper than we thought? Is it just not clicking at all, really?
It's been a very strange season for a lot of reasons. I think a big factor is, a season ago, Reggie Jackson was like a fringe all-star. Like, he basically just missed the bubble, more or less. And the Pistons were without him for the first 21 games of the season. And it took them some time to get used to Ish Smith. And then, you know, literally as soon as they got used to Ish Smith, it was time for Reggie to come back in after 21 games. And, by this point, like, everybody else in the NBA has been playing, like, basketball at full speed for about 2 months. Training camp starts at the end of September, then preseason kicks in October, and then you're playing basketball by the end of October. And so, really, Reggie was about 2 months behind in his conditioning and everything. I think that there were some chemistry issues that were primarily just like on the floor stuff, and I think it was just because they were not on the same page. They'd gotten adjusted to another guy, and then when the rightful heir to the point guard throne came back in, they just weren't clicking. And Reggie and Ish play like drastically different styles, and one of them is a little more amenable to a team that had gotten used to sharing the ball, and the other one is just completely not, and I think that's really bogged the Pistons' offense down quite a bit. to say nothing of the defense, which has been its own set of problems.
we'll definitely get onto the defense a little bit later, but it's interesting that you bring that up, because that's what I was going to ask you about just a bit later. The difference in play style between Ish Smith and Reggie Jackson is quite marked. I mean, Reggie's more of the take the ball, pound the ball, try and work something out. He'll try and work some lanes and see if he can get inside to the rack or if he can shoot, and then he'll try and think about others second. Ish is more of the sprint down at full speed, dish the ball off to someone else and see if they can get an easy bucket or just shoot from there. So it's really interesting when you look at the fact that the Pistons really struggle to score on the fast break, especially with a guy such as Ish Smith running the bench. And then the three-point field goal percentage, as has been mentioned, is pretty terrible. I mean, 26th in attempts, 26th shooting percentage in the league off threes, which doesn't help. So it's a pretty different style to what Stan's been preaching in all his previous coaching jobs.
Very much so. I think that some of that is because, like, the Pistons just, they aren't shooting from long range like you would think. They don't have a collection of really good shooters. They have, like, league average to slightly below league average shooters, depending on, like, whether you think that Reggie Jackson's, I think he's shooting about 36-37% from three, whether you buy that being sustainable. KCP is shooting about 40% from three. You know, it depends on whether you believe that to be sustainable. Marcus Morris is, by all accounts, you know, a slightly below league average three-point shooter. Same with Tobias Harris. John Luehr was brought in to be that three-point shooting big, and really all he hasn't done well is shoot threes. Like, he's been pretty good at everything else, and, like, significantly below average and below his career marks from three-point range. You know, when you don't shoot threes, you can't get to the free throw line because all they do is shoot from the mid-range. Like, you don't get extra points, you don't get easy points, you don't get any kind of, you don't get any help, you know. When you're, like, shooting 44% from mid-range or whatever, which is a pretty good rate, that's still 88 points for 100 possessions, you know. Like, you multiply the percentage by two, and that's what you get. Like, there's no supplemental points there whatsoever. And that's damning for them because, like, you know, Andre Drummond is not a post-up guy. Like, where do you get your offense from him, you know? You get past the pick and roll, there's just not a whole lot of ways for them to get points in the half court.
Yeah, you're exactly right. The thing that worries me so much about Stan Van Gundy is that we've seen that he does actually bring in, well, not exactly the best three-point shooter, and then he expects them to shoot threes, a.k.a. Hito Turkoglu back in Orlando. That was some good times. Watching that big man who's, what, like 6'11", trying to shoot some threes. He's done it again with Tobias. I mean, Tobias is good. He's a good three-point shooter on his day. Same as KCP, really, and John Luehr and Marcus Morris. But you could say the whole team is kind of inconsistent. Well, Tim, that's why I think SPG tried to make acquisitions for guys known as knockdown shooters, such as Jody Meeks, Anthony Tolliver, Marcus Thornton in that trade that didn't end up going through. But they're the kind of guys that Stan's been bringing in. So do you think Stan knows that the three-point, well, inability to shoot from three is becoming a real issue for the Pistons, Duncan?
It's a strange thing because a lot of these guys that you mentioned, like Jody Meeks, for example, I think he shot 40% or just a touch below 40% the previous season with the Lakers, and then he came into the Pistons and he was... I don't want to say like 10 unplayable. Games. yeah. And then he got hurt the season after, and he got flipped to the Magic and just, you know, a salary dump because the Magic are basically there for whatever the Pistons want. I think they're, you know, there's some sort of karmic making up to do that, whether the Magic are aware of it or not. I think that the universe has just decided that whatever resources Stan Van Gundy wants from them, you know, he'll fleece them at all turns until they have nothing left. So
yeah, Stan will just finesse them over there.
Yeah, I can't wait till we get Alfred Payton and Serge Ibaka to
for a second round pick. No worries.
Yeah, that may or may not convey. So the shooting is it's a concern, and it's strange because a lot of these guys have track records of being decent shooters elsewhere. What it is about the rims at the Palace, I don't know, but it's proven to be kind of strange. Yeah,
I was just about to say, good thing you're leaving the Palace Auburn Hills this season. Maybe you should be better at the new stadium.
Maybe it'll be better downtown, yeah.
Well, maybe the Pistons can draft better at the downtown arena as well. Actually, speaking of draft, there's the newest DFS website, or daily fantasy website, that's called Draft. I'm not sure if you've heard of it, Duncan, but me and James here have been grateful enough to be given a promo code by Draft to... the chances of winning on Draft are 1 in 4. If you go on DraftKings or FanDuel, they're 1 in 10. So that's more than double a percentage chance of you winning. More than double if you play on playdraft.com. So if you, just for listening to this podcast, you get to use our promo code WaiverWirePod, all in capitals, WaiverWirePod. Just jump down in the description, it'll be there. So when you sign up for Draft, just go into the little section that says promo code, put in the promo code WaiverWirePod, and you get up to $600 back. $600. So if you deposit $600, you get $600 in free money to play straight away. That's how good this promo code is, thanks to our friends over at Draft.
So moving on from the three-point shooting and now into the central positions, we've got Aaron Baines. He had a superb year the season before. Maybe that was because he wanted a big contract, you know, coming in from the Spurs. He wanted to show off his new contract. We know he wants to show off his new hairdo and beard, but well, why has he performed so badly this year, and why has his minutes just fallen to nothing, really?
It's tricky with this team because there's, like I mentioned before, there's been really no continuity. The Pistons do have like three centers in Drummond, Baines, and Boban, and they've also got John Luer, who can pretty much be like moved to center or power forward. And Baines is, you know, he's at best offensively limited. You know, he doesn't have hands per se. He's not a scorer. He's not a finisher. He's, you know, all effort and everything, which is great. And defensively, I think that's shown up to some degree. He's got the best defensive rating on the team as of last check, I believe. I think he also has the best net rating, but I think that's mostly due to the fact that he doesn't play with the starters, which is a good thing because the starting lineup is, from a defensive standpoint, is you know, a total disaster. So he's insulated from the fact that he plays with the bench unit, which more or less it has its limitations, but it is not. It's not a dumpster fire, which the starting lineup, all starting lineups that the Pistons have put out there have been so far. So I'm not sure that I would agree that he's been terrible or bad. I think he's more or less been what we've expected, but what we've expected really wasn't all that much in the first place.
Do you just think his play last year was, well, he was outplaying his contract last year and he's come a bit back down to earth?
I think that's probably the case, yeah. I think he met the value of his contract, perhaps, and now he's probably just like underplaying it a little bit or being a little bit more of what we thought he was when the Pistons signed him in the first place. And people were, you know, screaming from the mountaintops that like his $6 million per year was just completely, you know, outrageous, which in the current salary climate, you know, I mean, it's hard to play the NBA level and be like playable in any way and not make $6 million per year right now.
Yeah, at $6 million, you're like, yeah, kind of whatever. Corey Brewer makes $7 million. And I saw you replied to my tweet that Josh Smith is getting paid $5
million. $5.4 million, yep. The way so, I like know. To express it is if you have a kid who is beginning a four-year college course, you know, if he's a freshman right now, by the time that your kid who is a freshman now graduates college, that will be right around the time, like give or take a few months, when Josh Smith comes off the Pistons books.
You might as well bring him back on a veteran minimum contract and see if he can chuck up some threes and help you from outside, huh?
Yeah, you might as well. I mean, we've got a couple guys who are shooting at the same time. Yeah.
That'll be fun. Well, still talking about the big man on the Pistons, Andre Drummond, much maligned by the supporters, even though he's a rebounding monster. We all know how important the center is in the Stan Van Gundy 4-out-1-in system, and Andre Drummond's probably one of the best rebounders in the league at this point in time. So, in reality, can Detroit win the East with Andre as their best player?
I think that a team could win the East with him on the team. I don't think that a team that has Andre Drummond as their best player could win the East. I think that a really good comparison would be what the Clippers are doing with DeAndre Jordan. He stays far away from like the inefficient offense that Drummond seems to be, either whether it's himself determined to get or whether it's schematic, like whether Van Gundy has just decided that post touches are what is required to keep Drummond engaged. Be that as it may, I did a breakdown of this both on Twitter and then on a post on Piston Powered, analyzing how inefficient he is from the post, and in effect, his 43% free throw shooting rate is a touch more efficient than his post offense is. When you break down the fact that if we assume two free throws every single time down, his 43% free throw rate would get him about 86 points per 100 possessions. And then you think about the fact that some of those free throw chips are and ones. They're one free throw, not two. What we can consider 86 points per 100 is the ceiling of
what. Are you saying Drummond's not going to get 3-point shooting fails?
he's not getting many 3-point trips, no.
But he's actually the best 3-point shooting percentage player on the Detroit team at the moment. He's making those half court heaves.
He's really close, actually. I think he's at 33%.
Is he 66%? I think he's two of three from the half court.
I think I was looking at his career rate recently. Yeah. So on the season, he's far above.
Dan's going to get him outside jacking up three.
whatever works. But when you consider the 86 points for 100, he's scoring something 72 points for 100 possessions from the post. He's way more efficient from the free throw line than from the post, which is, a dirty little secret, and it's not good news.
It's pretty scary considering he's the second worst free throw shooter in the league?
Yeah, second or third worst.
I think DeAndre Jordan's improved his free throw percentage, but...
Yeah.
Do you know that, Duncan?
I think Drummond's actually the worst. He has had the worst season. Last year it was 35.5%, I think.
At least he doesn't airball him as much as Joakim Noah.
Yeah.
Yeah, when he misses, at least they're not really ugly misses. Noah has this weird push shot, at least Drummond, when Drummond
his
hits
arms
it,
on the side, yeah.
Yeah, when Drummond hits it, it looks like it should be a good free throw,
Just that, unfortunately, it's not. Well, from Andre as the lead player, do you think with Reggie Jackson, we talked about earlier, almost all-star caliber last year, and then missed the bubble, do you think he can be the starting point guard for a Detroit team that goes all the way?
Yo, everybody get up! Everybody get up! Everybody needs to understand that I'm more than simply a hype man for this rap group. Just like Geico is more than just a company that can save you money. Geico also has fast and friendly claim service, so they can help you when you need it most. And while I do love being a hype man, I also love reading for children's audiobooks. Like Little Bo Peep, she lost a sheep, and she don't know where to find them. Yo!
Geico. Expect great savings and a whole lot more.
I'm really hesitant to talk about any team going all the way, because you have the Warriors and the Cavs. State, right. There's just insurmountable tasks in front of a team trying to go all the way. But for an Eastern Conference contender, maybe. I'm skeptical because Reggie's been unequivocally bad lately. Last 10 games or so, I was looking at just earlier tonight. He's been playing poorly. His numbers are down across the board from about a month stretch there. He was playing really, really well from about Christmas until about the middle of January or so. Since that point, he's been not good at all. And my own feeling is that he's not quite right yet. I think that knee is probably still bothering him. He's got no explosiveness. A Reggie Jackson possession is usually he dribbles the ball for 6 to 10 seconds, gets about 15 feet away, and then pulls up for a jump shot. you know, he doesn't have any burst off the dribble. And when you're a guy that's going to be dominating the ball so much and creating your own offense so much, having no explosiveness and being very, very willing to settle for mid-range pull-up jump shots, they're a pretty bad recipe, you know. And then when you look at the other primary offensive option being Andre Drummond and his post-ups, you have a pretty grim situation for your offense, which is why, like, Ish Smith, of all people, is actually, like, a superior option right now, I think, which is strange enough, you know?
Yeah, well, how much does it hurt you that Spencer Dinwiddie is starting for the Brooklyn Nets?
And balling at the moment, too.
I haven't looked at his numbers in a while, but I'm thrilled that he's starting. Before the season, he and I would talk somewhat regularly on Twitter. We had a quick sit down for about 20 minutes over the phone for an interview. I wanted to sort of catch up on how things have. He had a ridiculously crazy summer. You know, he got traded, he got waived, he got signed again, he got waived. He spent a month and a half, I think, in a D League before the Nets picked him up. Of all the D League guys who get pulled up to the NBA, he's been the guy that I've had my eye on like the whole time. I would have preferred the Pistons actually keep him rather than go through the whole Ray McCallum and Lorenzo Brown, and then ultimately like 11th hour waiving of, you know, releasing them both to the D League and then signing Beno Udrih. They could have really just avoided the whole thing if they just kept Spencer, but nobody knew that Reggie would get hurt, and nobody knew that the season would play out the way that it has. So I'm just glad he's out balling somewhere and getting to play some starting minutes. But it does make me sad, though.
Yeah, it's always good to see someone taking their chance from the D League. But I don't think we really know how much of an impact it really, like, especially like fans, like writers or fans or podcasters like us, who don't have we don't have the ability to talk to the players like you do. We don't really understand how much, like, they go through when they, you know, get traded and waived. Like, you have to fly out of your team to another team only to arrive there on the plane and get told that you've been waived and you're not here anymore, and then you just have to go somewhere else, and then someone else picks. Like, how would was it Beno Udrih you got traded four times in 4 days?
Luke Ridnow.
Oh, Luke Ridnow. Got traded to four teams in 4 days. It's just like a package. He had to move four different countries. Can you imagine going home and telling your wife? Jeez.
He didn't have to move to four different countries, but I think the Raptors were one of the teams that were involved in his trade, so he did have to deal with two different countries. And then
have you got your passport ready?
I think the team that was his final destination like ended up waiving him like later that same day. So he went to four different teams, and then it was just, you know, cut loose in about 96 hours, I think, if I recall correctly. It was a really savage story to follow.
Yeah, probably should have just sat on his couch with a beer and just enjoyed it, watching it, you know, calling me up on Twitter. Oh, I got traded again. Oh, that's nice. Yeah, I'm not going anywhere till tomorrow.
Right. Luckily, it was the off season, I think. So I think it was really just like, you know, words on paper being passed around that really didn't mean anything until, you know, training camp started up. I think it was like June or July. But, you know, just seeing yourself being in so many, not even rumors, seeing yourself being like moved from place to place to place has got to be like just a really surreal situation that like normal human beings just cannot ever fathom.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, can you imagine you getting traded from Piston Power to House of Houston? just straight out of there.
16 wins a ring to the Almighty Ball podcast network.
Well, now that I speak of House of Houston, let's talk about the Houston Rockets. I know we've got a lot to discuss there. We've long discussed the ideals behind the Rockets' style of basketball, the high-intensity volume of threes and getting inside the paint and scoring right at the hoop. And what are your views on this?
I think that the Rockets play pretty close to the optimal system. I mean, the Warriors, whatever. I think that when you have, you know, three of the best 10 and four of the top 20 players in the NBA, your system doesn't matter all that much, although it's a pretty optimized system that they have in Golden State. But I think that when you've got what is an easier thing to attain, like the Rockets do, which is like a superstar and then a bunch of role players that sort of, they fit roles where needed. Like, they fit exactly the kind of roles and designations that a team like the Rockets would seek out of their role players. I think that their style of play is basically like optimized for like what most teams should be striving for.
All right, Duncan, we've heard rumors on the grapevine that you've actually garnered a meeting with Daryl Morey sometime in the future. Got any news for us about what you're going to be discussing?
Well, a meeting might be a little bit grand. I think we're probably going to talk on the phone for like 3 or 4 minutes. But yeah, we're something that has been reflected in my writing on 16 Wins a Ring. It wasn't my original plan to like become the Rockets and James Harden's own personal biographer, but it's just kind of happened. One of the most interesting things to me this season, the recent losing stretch notwithstanding, has been sort of like the redemption story for both Harden after like a disappointing season last year, and for the Rockets themselves, you know, becoming like the poster child for Charles Barkley on like the failure of quote unquote analytics teams. It's a system of play that works if you've got the guys to do it. You know, like you don't shoot bad mid-range shots, you get a lot of points in the paint, you score a lot, you get a lot of threes, you shoot a lot of free throws, you play defense, you know, as much as your personnel allows. Like it's a system that just kind of can't not work if you have like all things being equal. But you know, with last season's colossal failure, this season I think has been sort of a point of redemption for Harden, for the Rockets, for Daryl Morey's philosophies and system, and I mean the way he strategizes about the game, I would say is something that I've taken a lot from. Like, I mean, when I play 2K, the only guy that I let shoot mid-range jumpers is James Harden as well. So it's a thing that works. So it's good to see things evening out and see the inevitable success of that system coming into place.
Yeah, Morey had he brought in the philosophy of shooting threes and getting inside of the paint, and a lot of people you heard in the he started in around 2008, but if you heard in the early 2011-12, a lot of commentators even would bring it up pretty much every single game. Oh, this team looks to shoot a lot of threes. They look to get points in the paint. And he was almost ridiculed for his, well, try and eliminate mid-range shots kind of ideals. And then, because McHale could never really implement it in Houston, and they did shoot a high volume of threes, but not to the volume they're shooting now. But the efficiency was a lot lower than it is now. And I think that really comes about because of what Mike D'Antoni has been able to do in Houston, and because of James Harden being, well, having probably he's the best year of his career. And the big difference between this year and last year, really, in terms of the colossal failure that was last year and then this season, has been players are hitting shots. And that really comes about because James Harden is creating so much gravity, and the way D'Antoni set things up, there's so much room for these shooters to be able to get their shots off and they're not rushed. So the system that Morey kind of craves, it works. It's just finding the guy like D'Antoni to kind of implement it properly, and the superstar in James Harden, who's probably the best player in the league to probably implement it. It really just makes it work that much better. And I think that's really the biggest difference has been the fact that D'Antoni has been able to optimize this offense to a point where really they can do Daryl's wish.
Yeah, no question. I think that D'Antoni and Harden are actually sort of, they're probably, other than like Steph Curry and Steve Kerr, I think they're probably like the best union of like superstar and coach. You know, I mean, he's basically out there as a supercharged Steve Nash. You know, like whatever Steve Nash did, Canadian boy, you know, love him. He allegedly he follows 16 Wins a Ring on Twitter again, so I do not want to impugn the great Steve Nash, future Hall of Famer, but you know, anything Nash could do, James Harden can do better, and that's an incredible thing, and it's also a necessary thing, I think, in 2017 now. But he's also got like the benefit of more shooting around him as opposed to last year. He's got Eric Gordon, he's got Ryan Anderson. Trevor Ariza, I think, shoots 60% of his shots from three now. Like, he doesn't mess around in the mid-range.
Even dribble like, anymore.
It's a catch and shooter.
What's the point of dribbling? Just a waste of
exactly, yeah. And he's got guys who will run the pick and roll with him now.
Like, I mean, we want to talk about gravity. Like, you can't cheat on Harden, you know? Like, you give him an inch either way. Like, once that screen hits, like, he now basically just gets to choose how he's going to score 2 to 3 points against you. That's a really incredible thing, you know?
Well, yeah, so the Rockets have been a lot better this year, and people have been talking about maybe they have the ability to kind of grow into Western Conference contenders and maybe someone who can end up challenging the Warriors. So do you know, like, do you have any thoughts on what the Rockets need to add to get into that upper echelon with the Warriors?
I mean, they're definitely a piece or two away, you know. Shy of, like, multiple injuries happening to the Warriors, the Rockets aren't getting by them. What pieces exactly they would need to get by specifically the Warriors?
Napa know-how.
The Napa guy knows not to judge a man by his car's multicolored paint job or absence of modern gadgetry. Who cares if it's technically old enough to vote and the windows are powered by the strength of your left arm? Your monthly payment is zero, and it'll stay that way. Because with over 500,000 parts and a little Napa know-how, you can keep anything on the road. She may not be pretty, but she's all yours. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
I'm not really sure. I mean, the defense has got to be better. Obviously, like, Golden State has the best offense and defense rating-wise. And I think at last check, the Rockets were somewhere around the 18 to 20 range as far as defensive rating goes. So you guys could probably confirm or deny that. They're a few elements away, certainly. But this could very well be a Western Conference final team. And I think that's far beyond the ceiling that even, you know, Daryl Morey might have had for them coming into the season. It's definitely well beyond the... Yeah,
well, so with this core, do you think the Rockets can go all the way with D'Antoni and Harden and Morey all working together?
Yeah, with the right additions and maybe a fade from the Warriors, I think that this might be a team. Like, for example, I think that this team could probably beat Cleveland. I think this team would beat Cleveland if somehow they met in the finals.
Well, yeah, that's definitely... well, they have, their record's about 0.03 different to what Cleveland is now. And I think they've matched up earlier in the season and Cleveland did win. But I think with Ryan Anderson and Eric Gordon, when they're hot, it's just something you can't really contain that Harden creates. Anderson gets so much space. And the fact that he shoots his three-pointers from... maybe, three, four steps behind the three-point line, and you have to guard him out that far, too. It's kind of like what Steph Curry's been doing. Ryan Anderson's kind of the same thing. You've got to guard him all the way out behind that three-point line. It just creates so much room for the Rockets. So when they're firing, really, that offense is just unstoppable. So like you said, the offense probably isn't an issue. They could probably work on it still. Like, I think there's still room for improvement there. But like you said, the defense is really going to be the deciding factor if they can go all the way.
Yeah, no question about that, I think.
I think that's all we've got for you today, Duncan. You got any extra special questions for us?
You know, as soon as we hang up, I'm going to probably think of a bunch, but at the moment, I think this has just been a lot of fun. I'm glad we got the chance to finally do this. We tried last week, I think, and I had something come up at the last minute, but I'm glad we managed to get this thing done.
We're certainly glad the week that you're on. James is certainly glad, because it's good to finally have someone for him to bounce his Rockets ideas off, because whenever he says something to me, I just tell him that they're not going to win.
Well, you're right, they're not going to win, but
yeah, well, I just tell James that Westbrook's going to win the MVP and he goes on a rant for about 20 minutes.
Yeah, I got rants for that too.
Alright, thanks for joining us today, Duncan, the editor-in-chief of 16 Wins a Ring. You just got a promotion right here.
Pass on
and also
down,
the editor of Piston Powered. Thanks for coming on today.
You got it, thanks guys.
Napa guy knows more isn't always better, unless we're talking about full-size vans. These beasts do more than get you from A to B. They have so much space a man can live in it. With shag carpeting, waterbed, and a sweet lava lamp, these mobile abodes have all the comforts of home. With quality parts and plenty of Napa know-how, you can keep the original tiny house running longer, stronger. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
Cabela's is coming to Northern Virginia with a spectacular new store in Gainesville. Find everything you need for hunting, fishing, camping, and shooting sports, plus much more. Join us for our grand opening celebration Thursday, March 9th at 10 a.m. Be one of the first 500 in line and receive a Cabela's gift card worth up to $500, plus a chance to win one of three Remington firearms. See store for details. Don't miss Cabela's grand opening in Gainesville, located off I-66 and Highway 29 near Virginia Gateway.